This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
Please do not get alarmed, because this is the space show. Although it may not sound like it for the next 3 minutes.
Happiness is hard to come by back here in my hometown, and to find it once again I've got to move. Extinguish cigarettes, fasten seatbelts, take it easy. We're heading for a big and brighter groove. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Flying up there, looking down on the international scene. But the town's too small to turn to a friend who cannot keep a secret down. Give me a life of freedom in a big and busy city where secrets are too small to go around. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Flying up there, looking down on the international scene at Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. I'm back among the many friends I left some time ago. The music here sounds sweeter to my ear. It's great to see the progress all around me while I'm praying that my second chance of happiness lies here. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. Flying up there, looking down on the international scene at Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine.
Opening this evening's The Space Show, that was Kevin Shegog with his 1971 song, Melbourne Airport, Tullamarine. The airport had been opened the previous year in the presence of United States astronaut John Glenn, who was the third person to orbit the Earth. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie for the Space Association of Australia. Now, my first memory of Tullamarine was in 1972, when I visited the Astrojet Space Centre before flying out to Europe on a Malaysia-Singapore Airlines Boeing 707. The two-story Astrojet Space Centre was billed as a window to the space age. This included the Apollo moon landings that were then underway. More than 50 years later, Melbourne Airport has more than 25 million passengers pass through in a year, and that's post-COVID. On this evening's The Space Show, we look back 120 years to the origins of heavier-than-air aeroplanes with the successful flights by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where this is The Space Show with Andrew Rennie. It is 120 years since Wilbur and Orville Wright made their first heavier-than-air powered aeroplane flights at Kitty Hawk. Now, I say heavier-than-air because aeronauts had been flying balloons since 1783. And powered because the Wright brothers and others had been flying gliders downhill for several years. Now, Mike Ryan's song Between Heaven and Earth tells the story of what happened on 1903, December the 17th, at Kitty Hawk in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. days shy of Christmas, 19 and odd three. On the coast of Carolina, my brother and me. We stood atop the sand hills by the Albemarle Sound, with a mind to sail across the open sky between heaven and the ground. Well, we hail from Ohio, working men of modest means. Folks said that we were crazy for fooling with flying machines. They said, remember poor old Icarus, how he came crashing down. God would have gave men wings if they belonged between heaven and the ground. But when I close my eyes at night, the vision is the same. I see a sleek machine take flight, and I hear the clouds whisper my name. Knows the doubt our intentions, they will never understand how it feels to burn with passion and to build a dream with your hands, with your own hands. Off the water, as on the hill we stood. Next to our winged invention, made of wire, cloth, and wood. My brother cranked the engine, my heart began to pound. I climbed aboard and set a course between heaven and the ground. And if I lived a thousand lifetimes, I would not forget the day I rose into the cool morning air and I earth fall away. There above the sand hills, by the Albemarle Sound, two boys from Ohio touched the sky. Between heaven and the ground, we proved that day that dreams could fly between heaven and the ground.
The Wrights kept a diary, and this is what they wrote on that day 120 years ago.
Thursday, December 17th, 1903. When we got up, a wind of between 20 and 25 miles was blowing from the north. We got the machine out early and put out the signal for the men at the station. Before we were quite ready, John T. Daniels, W.S. Doe, A.D. Etheridge, W.C. Brinkley of Manteo, and Johnny Moore of Nag's Head arrived. After running the engine and propellers a few minutes to get them in working order, I got on the machine at 10:35 for the first trial. The wind, according to our anemometers at this time, was blowing a little over 20 miles, corrected, 27 miles according to the government anemometer at Kitty Hawk. On slipping the rope, the machine started off increasing in speed to probably 7 or 8 miles. The machine lifted from the track just as it was entering on the fourth rail. Mr. Daniels took a picture just as it left the tracks. I found the control of the front rudder quite difficult on account of its being balanced too near the center and thus had a tendency to turn itself when started, so that the rudder was turned too far on one side and then too far on the other. As a result, the machine would rise suddenly to about 10 feet and then as suddenly, on turning the rudder, dart for the ground. A sudden dart went out about 100 feet from the end of the tracks ended the flight. Time about 12 seconds, not known exactly as watch was not promptly stopped. The lever for throwing off the engine was broken, and the skid under the rudder cracked. After repairs, at 20 minutes, after 11 o'clock will made the second trial. The course was about like mine, up and down but a little longer over the ground though about the same in time. Distance not measured but about 175 feet. Wind speed not quite so strong. With the aid of the station men present, we picked the machine up and carried it back to the starting ways. At about 20 minutes till 12 o'clock I made the third trial. Went out about the same distance as Will's, I met with a strong gust from the left which raised the left wing and sidled the machine off to the right in a lively manner. I immediately turned the rudder to bring the machine down and then worked the end control. Much to our surprise, on reaching the ground the left wing struck first, showing the lateral control of this machine much more effective than on any of our former ones. At the time of its sidling it had raised to a height of probably 12 to 14 feet. At just 12 o'clock we'll start it on the fourth and last trip. The machine started off with its ups and downs as it had before, but by the time he had gone 300 or 400 feet he had it under much better control, and was traveling on a fairly even course. It proceeded in this manner till it reached a small hummock out about 800 feet from the starting ways, when it began its pitching again and suddenly darted into the ground. The front rudder frame was badly broken up, but the main frame suffered none at all. The distance over the ground was 852 feet in 59 seconds. The engine turns was 1071. But this included several seconds while on the starting ways and probably about a half second after landing. The jar of landing had set the watch on machine back so that we have no exact record for the 1071 turns. Will took a picture of my third flight just before the gust struck the machine. The machine left the ways successfully at every trial, and the tail was never caught by the truck as we had feared. After removing the front rudder, we carried the machine back to camp. We set the machine down a few feet west of the building, and while standing about discussing the last flight, a sudden gust of wind struck the machine and started to turn it over. All rushed to stop it. Will, who was near the end, ran to the front, but too late to do any good. Mr. Daniels and myself seized spars at the rear, but to no purpose. The machine gradually turned over on us. Mr. Daniels, having had no experience in handling a machine of this kind, hung on to it from the inside, and as a result was knocked down and turned over and over with it as it went. His escape was miraculous, as he was in with the engine and chains. The engine legs were all broken off, the chain guides badly bent, a number of uprights, and nearly all the rear ends of the ribs were broken. One spar only was broken. After dinner we went to Kitty Hawk to send off telegram to M.W. While there we called on Captain and Mrs. Hobbs, Dr. Cogswell and the station men.
The Wright brothers were well aware of the significance of their achievement and how important it was to tell the world. And this is a reading of their announcement telegram.
Success 4 flights Thursday morning, all against 21-mile wind, started from level with engine power alone, average speed through air 31 miles, longest 57 seconds, inform press home Christmas.
Now, just as today, when we have nutters who say humans have never been to the moon or that the Earth is flat, the Wright brothers had their naysayers or hoaxers to deal with. So, to counter this, they issued this statement to Associated Press.
It had not been our intention to make any detailed public statement concerning the private trials of our power flyer on the 17th of December last. But since the contents of a private telegram announcing to our folks at home the success of our trials was dishonestly communicated to the newspapermen at the Norfolk office and led to the imposition upon the public by persons who never saw the flyer or its flights of a fictitious story incorrect in almost every detail. And since this story, together with several pretended interviews or statements, which were fakes pure and simple, have been very widely disseminated, we feel impelled to make correction. The real facts were as follows. On the morning of December 17, between the hours of 10:30 o'clock and noon, four flights were made, two by Orville Wright and two by Wilbur Wright. The starts were all made from a point on the level sand about 200 feet west of our camp, which is located a quarter of a mile north of the Kill Devil Sand Hill, in Dare County, North Carolina. The wind at the time of the flights had a velocity of 27 miles an hour at 10 o'clock, and 24 miles an hour at noon, as recorded by the anemometer at the Kitty Hawk Weather Bureau station. This anemometer is 30 feet from the ground. Our own measurements, made with a hand anemometer at a height of 4 feet from the ground, showed a velocity of about 22 miles when the first flight was made, and 20 and a half miles at the time of the last one. The flights were directly against the wind. Each time the machine started from the level ground by its own power alone, no assistance from gravity, or any other source whatever. After a run of about 40 feet along a monorail track, which held the machine 8 inches from the ground, it rose from the track and under the direction of the operator climbed upward on an inclined course till a height of 8 or 10 feet from the ground was reached, after which the course was kept as near horizontal as the wind gusts and the limited skill of the operator would permit. Into the teeth of a December gale, the flyer made its way forward with a speed of 10 miles an hour over the ground and 30 to 35 miles an hour through the air. It had previously been decided that for reasons of personal safety, these first trials should be made as close to the ground as possible. The height chosen was scarcely sufficient for maneuvering in so gusty a wind and with no previous acquaintance with the conduct of the machine and its controlling mechanisms. Consequently, the first flight was short. The succeeding flights rapidly increased in length, and at the fourth trial a flight of 59 seconds was made, in which time the machine flew a little more than a half mile through the air, and a distance of 852 feet over the ground. The landing was due to a slight error of judgment on the part of the aviator. After passing over a little hummock of sand, in attempting to bring the machine down to the desired height, the operator turned the rudder too far, and the machine turned downward more quickly than had been expected. The reverse movement of the rudder was a fraction of a second too late to prevent the machine from touching the ground and thus ending the flight. The whole occurrence occupied little, if any, more than 1 second of time. Only those who are acquainted with practical aeronautics can appreciate the difficulties of attempting the first trials of a flying machine in a 25-mile gale. As winter was already well set in, we should have postponed our trials to a more favorable season, but for the fact that we were determined, before returning home, to know whether the machine possessed sufficient power to fly, sufficient strength to withstand the shocks of landings, and sufficient capacity of control to make flight safe in boisterous winds, as well as in calm air. When these points had been definitely established, we at once packed our goods and returned home, knowing that the age the flying machine had come at last. From the beginning, we have employed entirely new principles of control, and as all the experiments have been conducted at our own expense without assistance from any individual or institution, we do not feel ready at present to give out any pictures or detailed description of the machine.
The original Wright flyer now hangs in the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum in Washington, above the Apollo 11 command module and the lunar rock that all can touch. And yes, I have touched the moon. A part of the flyer was taken to the moon in 1969 aboard Apollo 11. In 2021, a piece of fabric from the flyer was attached to the Ingenuity Mars helicopter, which has now flown 67 times as it precedes the Perseverance rover up out of Jezero crater. Now, English poet Stuart Atkinson wonders whether the Dragonfly helicopter that will fly in the atmosphere of Saturn's moon Titan will also carry a part of Wright's flyer.
Frequent flyer Stuart Atkinson posted on 2021 April 3rd. Carried down to its golden sands in the Wright brothers' steady hands, you flew across the beach at Kitty Hawk brand new. As swooping gulls cawed angrily, the sky is ours. You cannot have it too. You soared above the reeds and dunes, defying gravity, making history. Then you flew to the moon, shaken in your wooden frame by sonic booms as the gleaming white Saturn V pierced Florida's sky en route to another beach, this time on the Sea of Tranquility's bone-dry shore. No angry birds there, no caps flung high into the air, only an ink-black sky awash with stars and Earth, a splash of white and blue. Now you are on Mars, a world so far away sunlight takes 15 minutes to reach your whirring blades, 78 times longer than your first flight lasted. Soon you will rise, buzzing like a bee blasted from a Martian's gun, flying through an alien pink sky beneath not one but two bone fragment moons and an icy, shrunken sun. And after that, surely your journey will continue. You'll hitch a ride through space again, swapping Jezero for Europa's icy plains before flying over Tholen-stained sand on the shores of Titan's lakes, hopscotching between strange new worlds, each one another Kitty Hawk on our flight across the Milky Way.
Now, Orville and Wilbur would never believe you if you popped into a time machine and told them that parts of their flyer would travel to the moon and to Mars and might even get to fly over Titan. Well, this song from 2023, yes, that written this year, is about the Wright brothers' flights and how aviation has developed from 1903 to today's discount airlines where passengers are herded aboard like sheep. This is by J.T. Steam and it's simply called Kitty Hawk.
Freezing December morning, we're sorry for the delay, but we've reattached the propeller, so it's time to get underway. You've shown your passports, checked in your case, you're cleared by the folks from the TSA. You've got your duty free and arrived at the gate at the airfield at Kitty Hawk. My name is Captain Orville. That's Wilbur to my right. We welcome you aboard for this historic flight. We're ready for departure now, so stow your bags, put the armrest down, fasten your belts and we'll be off the ground from the airfield at Kitty Hawk. Expect some turbulence, so please stay in your seats. When we reach an altitude of just above 10 feet, The engine is running, the power is fine. We'll be cruising after a gentle climb and be at our destination in 12 seconds' time. The airfield at Kitty Hawk. Herded like a sheep to its pen, you mutter under your breath, I'll never fly Ryanair again. But soaring over oceans in a metal can, watching ancient movies and eating something bland, remember that your whole trip began with the brothers at Kitty Hawk. On a windy Thursday morning on Kildevil Hills, the airfield at Kitty Hawk.
Southern FM.